So again, I'm Susan Hariri. I'm with the Division of STD Prevention at CDC, and I'm going to be talking about a new project that we affectionately refer to as the HPV Vaccine Impact Monitoring Project, which is a collaboration between CDC and the Emerging Infections Programs Network. The overarching objective of this project was to develop a population-based monitoring system that would allow us to evaluate the impact of the HPV vaccine over the next 10 years on cervical cancer precursor lesions. And what we are going to do is develop a system that will monitor HPV, the two different types of HPV-related cervical cancer precursor lesions, cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, or CIN, which is the majority of the cases, and adenocarcinoma in situ, or AIS, which is going to be less frequently detected. And we're also going to characterize the HPV DNA types that are associated with these precancer lesions, and to determine vaccination history among the identified cases, and finally to monitor overall trends in the aggregate related to cervical cancer screening, vaccine uptake, and other HPV-related disease in the catchment areas. So the outcomes that we're interested in measuring include the incidence rates of diagnosed cases of CIN2, CIN3, and AIS, and we'd like to compare that among those who were vaccinated and those who were not. We also want to look at the frequency and the distribution of HPV oncogenic types, again, stratified by vaccine status. Obviously, we're going to be interested in vaccine types 16 and 18, but we're also going to look at all the other oncogenic high-risk types and the different combinations that could be associated with these lesions. Ultimately, though, we really want to estimate the true burden of CIN2, CIN3, and AIS disease, and for that, we're going to need to estimate the probability of screening, cervical cancer screening in the population, and account for changes in screening practices and utilization that may be due to implementation of vaccine. So as I said, the majority of the cervical cancer precursors are going to be of the type referred to as cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, or CIN. And this is a term that is used to represent a spectrum of squamous changes in the epithelial layer of the cervix. And as you can see, this is really not, there's no real boundaries in as you go from left to right, where you have the normal cells that are replaced by abnormal cells. But for the purposes of clinical management, this CIN is actually divided into three discrete grades, CIN1, CIN2, and CIN3, and that depends on the thickness of the abnormality in the epithelial layer. So why are we monitoring CIN and AIS when what we're really interested in is invasive cervical cancer? Well, the main reason for it is that there's a very long lag time between infection with HPV and development of invasive cervical cancer. It can take up to several decades, and that's really not going to be a timely way to look at vaccine impact. Another reason is, as Dublina mentioned in her presentation, in areas with successful screening and treatment programs, there's going to be relatively fewer cases of invasive cancer and more cases of CIN that are going to be detected and treated. In the U.S., we have very high screening rates. So the precursor lesions that we're interested in are CIN2, CIN3, and AIS. AIS is carcinoma in situ of the glandular lining of the cervix, and it is known to progress to invasive cervical cancer. Likewise, CIN3 is an in situ carcinoma of the squamous cells, and it also is known to progress to invasive cervical cancer. CIN2 is a little more heterogeneous in that it may regress, especially if it's caused by low-risk HPV types. But we decided to include that in this monitoring project for a number of reasons. And one is that CIN2 is often indistinguishable histologically from CIN3. And a lot of times pathologists actually lump those two together and call a clinical case CIN2/3. CIN2 was also included in all the vaccine efficacy clinical trials along with CIN3. And CIN2 is used as a threshold for treatment in the U.S. for an extra measure of safety. So these cancer precursors then are just going to give us a better way to evaluate vaccine impact in a more timely fashion. However, this is still going to take a number of years, as you can see from the results of this model that was developed to look at vaccine impact on incidence of CIN2/3 lesions over time. And they used two different scenarios. The white line represents 12-year-old females being vaccinated from 0 to 70% coverage within 5 years. And then the green line represents, again, 0 to 70% coverage within 5 years of routine vaccination among 12-year-olds and catch-up for 12 to 24-year-olds. And as you can see, given the better case scenario, it would still take at least 5 years to detect a measurable difference in or a decline in CIN2/3 incidence. So we chose to engage in this project in a collaboration with the Emerging Infections Program, which is a population-based scientific public health network of CDC collaborators and 11 state health departments that collaborate with local health departments, public health and clinical laboratories, infection control practitioners, healthcare providers, academicians, and other federal agencies. And they serve as a national public health resource that engages in surveillance, prevention, and control of emerging infectious diseases and activities that go beyond usual healthcare department activities, including active surveillance, applied epidemiology and laboratory research, implementing and evaluating pilot prevention and intervention projects, and maintaining a flexible response. This is a map of the 11 geographically diverse states that are participating in the EIP program. And over time, there are a number of different activities and projects that either some or all of the EIP sites engage in. And sort of broadly categorized, they're active bacterial core surveillance, foodborne diseases, influenza projects, antibiotic resistance projects, hepatitis surveillance, and unexplained encephalitis and unexplained deaths. And now we're going to include the HPV vaccine impact monitoring project in four of the EIP sites. This is a list of health department and academic partners for the EIP network. And highlighted in orange are the four sites that are going to be collaborating in the HPV vaccine impact project. And they include the California, Connecticut, New York, and Tennessee state health departments, as well as University of California, Berkeley, Yale University, University of Rochester, and Vanderbilt. Now, our catchment areas are going to be county level and are going to include Alameda County in California, Davidson County in Tennessee, Monroe County in New York, and New Haven County in Connecticut. Just to give you an idea of the size of these catchment areas, the total female population 18 and over ranges from a little over 200,000 in Davidson County in Tennessee to about 550,000 in Alameda County, California. And the estimated annual number of CIN 2 and 3 cases in, again, in 18-year-olds and older is somewhere between 540 in Davidson County and 1,270 in California and Alameda County. So this was funded as a two-year initial project and with two objectives. And the first one was to develop a comprehensive approach to monitoring HPV type-specific CIN2/3 and AIS. And this would include monitoring incidence of the disease over time, characterizing HPV types among a subset of identified cases, and also determining vaccine history among a subset of cases. And then the second objective was to implement the plan in a pilot project. So the first objective, which was developing the monitoring system, it actually involved a number of different activities, which included identifying all the different partners and stakeholders at the community level that would be involved in this project, enumerating the different sources of data and specimen. In this case, they're all going to be pathology laboratories that are either in the catchment or outside the catchment, but that do serve the population of the catchment area. Evaluating the different data management and reporting capabilities of all the different pathology labs, reporting labs. Also looking into human subjects and IRB issues at the local level, especially as it relates to collecting biologic specimens and obtaining vaccine history on subjects. And then identifying sources of aggregate data in order to be able to estimate the rates of cervical cancer screening in the surveillance area. And then finally, putting all that into a summary plan and a protocol and reviewing it with CDC. Then the second part of this is to implement the plan in a pilot project to try to determine feasibility with respect to case finding, case reporting, specimen collection, and obtaining vaccine history, and also to determine any additional operational needs. So I'm going to give you a very simplified version of sort of what the process looks like in these catchment areas. It always begins with a woman going in for a routine screening. And if that screening indicates a certain type of abnormality on the cervical smear, then that patient is referred to further follow-up, which includes a biopsy. And it's at this point that the patient can then be diagnosed as having CIN23 or AIS. And in the event that a person is diagnosed with any of those endpoints, then that person is reported, preferably electronically, to our surveillance system, and a basic case report form is generated for that person. For a subset of cases between the ages of 18 and 39 that are going to be randomly selected, we're going to do more detailed investigation, which is going to include obtaining histologic specimens from the pathology lab that are stored at the pathology lab and were used for diagnosing the case. We're going to send that to CDC for PCR typing and central pathology review. We're also going to collect more detailed information, including vaccine history, on this subset of cases. And at the same time, the sites are going to be looking into getting sources of information for health utilization at the population level and screening rates in the areas. So the basic case report form, as I said, is going to be completed on all the reported cases that are eligible. And it's going to include minimal data elements, such as age, race, ethnicity, health insurance status, and type of insurance, and then the information related to the cervical biopsy that led to the diagnosis of the case. The enhanced case report form is going to be completed on a random subset, and the main purpose of collecting this information or generating this report form is to obtain vaccine history on the subset of cases that are going to have HPV typing. But we're also going to collect additional information on cervical cancer screening history that will give us a better sense of screening frequency and patterns among the cases, and also collect some other relevant medical history. The histopathologic review and HPV typing are going to be done at CDC, and again, random selected cases are going to have biopsy specimens sent to CDC, where the specimens are actually going to undergo a consensus review by a panel of pathologists in order to come up with a more standardized definition for the purposes of this project, and also undergo PCR testing for determining HPV DNA types. So as you can imagine, there are a number of different challenges associated with starting up a brand new monitoring system, but some that are unique to this particular project are case ascertainment. And the reason this is a challenge is that currently there's no standard nomenclature or terminology used to describe CIN2 and CIN3, and pathologists and pathology labs use a variety of different terms to describe these cases. And so one of our biggest challenges is to come up with an algorithm that that actually takes into account all the different terms and the permutations and the combinations into an algorithm so that we can do complete case ascertainment and to standardize that across the four areas that are monitoring this endpoint. And the other big challenge is where are we going to obtain vaccine history on the cases? Well, even though there are vaccine registries in all of our areas, the vaccine registries unfortunately don't cover the age group that we're interested in, which is adolescent vaccinations. And so another option then is to go to the outpatient medical records and review those charts, but that's going to obviously depend on whether the providers collect that information. So then the sort of last last resort is to actually interview the patients to get the vaccine history, which is going to be very time intensive and resource intensive. And then the third challenge is trying to implement a standardized electronic laboratory reporting system for reporting these cases to the EIPs. So in terms of timeline, the planning and the development of the system began in 2007, and we actually now have a common protocol that is undergoing IRB review at the local level, and pending approval, we're going to be collecting data sometime in the near future, in the next few months, and we're actually going to retrospectively collect data back to January of 2008. So that we have a full year's worth of data. And then once we establish the data collection methods, we're going to begin collecting specimens, again, sometime in 2008, and going back retrospectively to January of 2008. And the next steps then are to fully operationalize the system in the four selected areas. Make sure that we collect good baseline data and evaluate the success of the currently funded sites to look at the different strengths and limitations and potentially consider adding new sites to the monitoring project. And obviously the objective is that we're going to go beyond the 2 years and look at vaccine impact over the next 5 and 10 year horizon. And I'd like to acknowledge all of my collaborators that have worked tirelessly to make this happen. And that's it.
Questions?
Yes. Right. So the question is, are we going to be collecting information on pap smear results? And the answer is no. We are not going to be collecting any cytology information. Our endpoints are strictly going to be biopsy-confirmed CIN2 and 3 and AIS. Yes. Yes, we hope so. We actually have an HPV researcher at CDC who's going to be developing PCR methods to do specifically. Right, it's not the diagene. It's not the one that's commercially available. It's actually going to be manufactured in-house and it's going to be type specific. Yes. Yes, so AIS is an HPV-associated cervical cancer precursor, and we would expect to see a decrease. However, the numbers are going to be very small, and so it's going to take us a lot longer to actually appreciate any decreases in AIS.
Thank you.
Thank you.